If it doesn't change course, it's going to crash into us. He was saying. Ma, do something.
Gian, shut up.
Now look what you've done, said Pauline, glancing in the rearview mirror, to see both Lan and Joanne, in the dimness of the back seat, looking wide-eyed ahead of them. Her eyes went back to the road, where, just beyond the probing beams of the headlights, out in the blackness of the night, the orange glow was getting bigger.
Gian was right. Much further and much faster, and it, whatever it was, would collide with them. She accelerated, hoping and praying it would fly over them and past them.
Gian, silent now, was clenching the dashboard with both hands, and glancing nervously at her. Both twins were asking her what was happening. She wished she knew. And still the light came at them. She clenched the steering wheel tightly in anticipation of the impact, but the ball of light, flashing along at tree height, sped over them, momentarily dazzling her and lighting the car up as it did so.
Dear God, what was that? What's happening? She heard herself say.
Gian, what happened to it? Did it crash?
Gian turned quickly in his seat and looked out of the rear-view window.
It didn't, Ma, he was saying. It's still there, going at a fantastic speed away from us. It's already a couple of hundred yards away.
No. No. Wait. It's turning. It's turning.
Ma, it's corning back, very low, along the road.
It's following us.
Pauline bit her lip. Thank God we're nearly home, she thought to herself.
Got to get home.
How far was it?
Not far, surely?
She accelerated. The old car bumped and splashed down the thin, winding hill. Only a few miles to the little lane that led off the road, the last half mile to the farm.
Gian, where is it now?
No answer.
Gian evidently hadn't heard her. The twins were now crying and fretting so loudly in the back.
Gian, she shouted, the light, where is it?
Gian at last replied, his voice subdued with fear, right behind us, Ma.
It's right behind us.
Coming up on your side.
She didn't need telling. Suddenly the rearview mirror picked up the image of the fiery orange globe, momentarily dazzling her. Then it was gone for a split second, then back again, this time pulsating right knee to the window beside her, lighting up the side of the car. She clenched the steering wheel still tighter, fighting to keep the cumbersome car on a true course down the hill, the headlights now flashing everywhere, first to one hedge, then the other. And still the light was to the right, just out of vision. She glanced sideways. Like a gleaming, orange football, dazzling bright, a white, torch-like beam of light shining down from underneath it. But what was it? What was it trying to do? The twins, now screaming in fright, were leaning over her seat, clutching her around the shoulders.
Ma, Ma, what is it?
Please do something, please make it stop, they shouted over and over.
Gian, get the twins off me.
Get them to sit down, she instructed him. He didn't move, nor did he seem to hear, sitting motionless in the seat next to her, fists clenched, head bowed. The twins began grabbing at her more hysterically and the car began swerving dangerously across the road. She began sobbing herself.
Please God, let them get home.
Then there was the turning. Only half a mile. But wait. The headlights were going dim. Can't see properly. They're failing. Just turn the corner safely. Please God, let the lights last for long enough to get them down the lane to home. She glanced to her right. The globe of light was still there right next to her, racing along parallel to the car, basing them. She gritted her teeth against her sobbing. They had to make it. But the lights had failed now, they'd gone completely. Blackness ahead. Completely black. And inside the car, darkness except for the orange glow from the light. And now, what was that? No power. No accelerator. The car was dead. The light was stopping them.
Dear God, it mustn't.
Not now. Not so close. They could freewheel from here. It was only 100 yards. Hold the car straight. There are the lights from the farm. Nearly there. She started crying openly, the tears blurring her vision.
Billy, please be there.
The car was slowing, stopping, had stopped, but where was the light? It was suddenly so dark, so still.
had it gone? It wasn't next to her window. But wait. That glow, that faint orange glow. Where was it coming from? It wasn't anywhere around the car. It must be overhead. But why? What was it waiting for? No matter. They were home. Must get the kids out of the car and inside. They weren't safe here. Kieran, get over the passenger seat and into the back and get the twins out as fast as you can, she called over the children's screams. I'll follow. Kieran was motionless, still trembling, head bowed. She shook him into action, pushing him over the seat, then helping him to prise the twins off from around her neck, where they still clung. Still crying, the three children fell out of the rear door of the car in panic, Pauline following them into the darkness, stumbling after them, urging them on, never looking back. On and on, down the last remaining yards of the dark lane, up the garden path, into the warm light of the farmhouse porch. Billy. Open the door. Open it. Please. Please hurry. Bloody hell, love, what on earth's the matter? What's happened to you? Billy looked at his family in bewilderment when he opened the door, Clinton behind him. He took Pauline in his arms. Kieran grabbed him and started sobbing. The twins, weeping uncontrollably, clung to their eldest brother for comfort. Clint, take Kieran and the twins into the front room, ordered Billy, then turned and looked into Pauline's tear-stained eyes. Now tell me slowly, love, what the hell's going on here? What's happened? Oh God, Billy. I don't know, some light, some bright ball of light came down at us out of the sky, nearly hit us, then followed us all the way home. It stopped the car, hung over us. It's still there. You've got to do something. The words came out in a torrent and she began shaking. Billy nestled her to him and took her gently into the front room and sat her down next to the fire with the children. Help the kids, love. They're worse off than you. I shan't be a minute. I'll just go outside with Clinton and see what's happening. The two men walked quickly out into the night, Billy frowning and shaking his head incredulously, Clinton hurrying along behind. Damn me, what's going on now? Lights following people home? I've never heard anything so daft. Clinton was unconvinced. Like his father, he knew Pauline was no person to panic in the way she had done. Nor was she one to frighten easily. Many a time she'd walked the land around the farm on errands for Billy at the dead of night, in total darkness, armed only with a small torch. She didn't spook easily. To be as frightened as she was, something must have happened. They turned the corner at the end of the garden path and started up the lane. A couple of yards. Then stopped. The silhouetted shape of the car was already visible in the darkness, bathed as it was in a ray of white light emanating from the orange globe of light that hung motionless over it. My God, look! Billy's words hung in the air. Clinton grabbed his father's arm. Dad! What is it? Billy shook his head and fell back a few paces in surprise, further shielding Clinton. Damnedest thing I ever saw. I've no idea. What'll we do? Before Billy could answer, the light moved suddenly. The beam of light vanished, the globe itself streaked off at an angle, high up over the house, across the fields behind him and down in the direction of the cliff edge in the distance. And gone. The two men looked at each other, their expressions reflecting their disbelief in what they'd seen. It was now pitch black again. Billy fumbled in his pocket for his torch, switched it on and they followed its beam to the stranded car. Neither spoke. The only noise was the crunching of gravel beneath their feet. Billy tried the engine and the lights. Dead. Together they rolled the car down to the front of the house, where they left it, before going inside to check on the rest of the family. Pauline and the children were sitting in silence, tears tamed and bewildered, but calmer now. Billy told them that they, too, had seen the globe, but that it had left. Clinton went into the kitchen to make a plate of sandwiches and some cocoa for them all. After a while, relative composure had settled over them as they tried to comfort one another by explaining away what they'd all seen. A trick of light, surely? Impossible. Something else? What else? No explanation seemed to fit. But no matter. It was over. The light had gone. They were together, at home, safe. That was all that mattered. Pauline, feeling better in herself, began to worry about the after effects on the children. She didn't want them to have nightmares, least of all Anne, after all her dreaming about phantom figures prowling the house at night. She suggested quietly to Billy that they should still be allowed to watch the rest of the $6 Million Man and perhaps the program that followed it. It would help take their minds off what had happened. Billy leaned over to her, shaking his head slowly, and whispered in her ear, "Not possible, love. Just before you and the kids arrived with that light thing over the car, this television suddenly overloaded and burned out all its wiring, just like the others." Chapter 3. Spring. A typical April morning. Pauline looked out from the kitchen window across the rolling green fields bathed in mid-morning sunshine, out over the cliff edge to the twinkling sea beyond. Beautiful. Her favorite view of her favorite season. Winter, with all the rigors it brought with it, was truly over, and one of the nicest farming seasons was with them. Her gaze wandered skywards as it now always tended to, ever since she had first seen the light. It had been 3 weeks since she and the kids had been chased by the ball of light, but time hadn't dimmed the memory. It was not through lack of trying, either. Nobody had, in fact, mentioned the incident since then, not since Billy had been unhappy with the local newspaper story that had come out about it. He still couldn't bring himself to believe in such comic book things as UFOs, as she herself could barely bring herself to, and they had both feared not only ridicule within the community, but that the children would get even more frightened by further reminders of what had happened. He just didn't want to talk about the incident anymore, and the family respected his wishes. But it hadn't helped. The family did remember, all too well, and it rested uneasily on their minds. With good reason. Even if they had been able to forget, there had been an increasing number of other inexplicable happenings during the intervening weeks, bringing the memory sharply back into focus and quietly unnerving everybody. Something was definitely wrong with the house and the family. Billy, normally so rambunctious and cheerful, was often irritated and impatient. Clinton, normally so withdrawn slash introverted and so much of a loner, was even more so. Joanne and Lynn, normally as playful and mischievous as any two schoolgirls of their age, were more subdued. And herself? She pondered the thought. Though single-minded, she had to go along with Billy in his skepticism about such things as UFOs, flying saucers, spacecraft, or call them what you will. They were ordinary farming folk with the down-to-earth basic values of farming folk. What did they know of such things, or even care about them? But on the other hand, what the hell had started happening to them and their lives? Normally everything was as predictable as the seasons, the way they liked it, but now it had become so complicated. The light in the sky, the light chasing the car, Lan's phantom figure in the house, Clinton's strange humming noise outside the bathroom window, all those fuses that had blown and the light bulbs that had exploded, the three cars and three television sets that had suddenly burned out all their wiring. It had all happened within 3 months, ever since she first saw the light in the sky that night, and they could find no explanation for any of it. Why shouldn't she, or the rest of the family, feel a bit frightened? They had problems, but could solve none of them and could seemingly find nobody who could. No local car mechanic could explain what had been happening to their cars, how all the wiring except the parts made out of copper could suddenly burn itself to a cinder, equals ashes, and, similarly, no local TV engineer had been able to explain why the same thing was happening to their televisions. Though it wouldn't explain what happened to the cars, but just in case it was something to do with faulty wiring in the house, she'd even taken the trouble to get an electrician in to check the whole place over. When he'd come, she'd told him about everything that had been happening and how the whole family were now also suffering electric shocks when they touched the taps, and how worried Billy was about the soaring electricity bills. The engineer had agreed to check every appliance in the house and all the wiring. Everything, he said at the time, was in perfect working order. The wiring? It looked fine. Then he checked the meters to see where the high consumption was coming from. Totally impossible. Absolutely impossible. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen. Inexplicable. He'd turned off the electricity at the main supply, yet the meters were still going round. An awful lot of voltage is being drained from this house, he had said, looking totally bewildered. But where it's going to, and how it's going, I couldn't tell you. Billy hadn't believed it at the time. He'd insisted on having the whole place rewired, especially because the electrician had speculated that they were living in a force field and had said that the whole house was so alive with electricity he was amazed someone hadn't been electrocuted. It hadn't done any good, though. All the problems had remained. She sighed to herself. What was going to happen next? She shook herself out of her daydream. Time to get back to matters of daily routine. There was everybody's lunch to get ready. Billy would be in shortly from fencing in the lower field, Clinton would be coming over from next door's farm, and Kieran and the twins would be in from school. She busied herself with the cooking and had the food on the table just as everyone arrived. Billy, normally so hungry he sat down immediately and tucked straight in, came straight over to her, took her arm and led her gently to one side. "Come into the front room, love," he whispered. "I've got something really odd to tell you." Leaving his food on the table and the rest of the kids to eat their lunches, he guided her to the next room and sat her down. "Just been talking to your brother, Terry, haven't I? Told me the queerest story. Seems he had to tell someone. It was driving him potty, equals crazy, keeping it to himself, and I'm not surprised. Seems your two-year-old nephew, young Mark, frightened the wits out of the family about 10 days ago with some tale of having met a spaceman in a field near here. Came home one night sobbing and trembling and nearly hysterical he did. Reckons he was in that field behind their house, about 100 yards from the house, when this huge great figure in a silver suit appeared from a glowing, red, saucer-shaped object and started walking towards him. Young Mark apparently walked back to the edge of the field, near the road, and the figure kept coming towards him. Under the street light he saw quite clearly what he looked like. He reckons he was very tall, had a square, helmeted head with a black visor, an aerial sticking up from one shoulder, and was wearing a silver suit and black heelless boots. Well, you can imagine how I laughed when Terry told me, but Terry's not so sure. As he says himself, young Mark's a very responsible lad, not given to deafening tales, and he was apparently scared half out of his mind when he got home. Not only that, but Terry reckons he went back to where Mark said he was followed by this figure and found a giant footprint in some slurry. Isn't that the damnedest thing you ever heard? Anyway, listen, love, don't tell the kids, all right? They'll probably get to hear about it anyway, but we don't want to frighten them, even if it is a load of bloody nonsense, which I'm sure it is. Billy stood up, chuckling and shaking his head incredulously, and started back to the kitchen. She knew Mark, her nephew, very well. Never was a child more honest or less likely to make up such a preposterous story. And even if he had done, why was he frightened to the point of hysteria? And where did that giant footprint come from? She sighed deeply, shook her head, got up and went back into the kitchen to join Billy and the family. Neither mentioned what they had heard. She, in a way, would have liked to, particularly she would have liked to talk to Mark. But she wouldn't, not with Billy already thinking the whole affair was a load of nonsense. She shrugged. He was probably right. After lunch she said goodbye to Billy and the kids as they went about their separate ways, and set about tidying and getting ready for dinner that evening. She looked forward to Friday nights, as that was when she and Billy stayed up to watch the midnight movie on television, a luxury they could afford on that particular night, as Billy's half-day was on the Saturday. He'd be late home that night, as it happened. Another, the fourth in 3 months, had inexplicably burned all its wiring to a cinder, and he planned to go down the road to a neighboring farm to try and borrow a car until they could buy a new one. She shuddered at the memory of what had happened to that last car. This time the wiring had burned out when Billy started it, and the car had burst into flames in the forecourt of a nearby garage. They had put it out just in time. Somebody could have been killed. She dismissed the thought from her mind. Billy would be hungry when he got in. She'd cook him something special. The film was Chucker, starring Chuck Connors. It should be a good evening. Pauline looked at her watch as she heard the front door opening. 10 o'clock. just as he'd promised. She'd never known anyone in her life as punctual as Billy. Dinner was already on the table, she'd got the fire roaring in the grate and the television was tuned into the right channel for the start of the film at 10:35. After dinner she'd leave the washing up in the sink and settle straight down with Billy in front of the fire.
"Ah, that's the life," said Billy, groaning with pleasure as he discarded his Wellingtons, stretching out in his favorite armchair by the window and warming his feet by the fire.
"A Western, is it? That's grand. Just the job." Pauline smiled to herself as she stretched out on the sofa opposite him and wondered if he'd last out to the end of the film, or sink into a deep sleep as he so often did. 1 hour later he was snoring loud enough to raise the roof. Pity, it was a grand film, just the sort he loved, plenty of action. Maybe she should wake him? Get them both some tea? No, let him sleep on. She smiled to herself again as she watched him sleep, slumped to one side, mouth open, woolen hat still perched on the back of his head as it always was. A picture of contentment. If only Blackie was as contented. She'd never known him to be so restless. Normally he'd lie in typical Labrador fashion at his master's feet in front of the fire. But not tonight. For the last hour he'd been padding around the room furiously, weaving in and out of the furniture, sniffing the ground, ears pricked up, tail between his legs. She'd put him out if he didn't settle down soon. And now, it looked like visitors. Car headlamps coming down the drive to judge from the light reflection on the window. Who on earth would be visiting at this time of night? They hadn't invited anyone. A pity, it was so peaceful, too, apart from Blackie's confounded behavior. Company was the last thing they wanted. But wait, there was no noise on the gravel and the flickering light against the window pane hadn't passed by, but it was still there. Strangest thing. Oh well, no matter. She snuggled back into the sofa and tried to blot out the sound of Billy's snoring so that she could concentrate on the film. That constant flickering at the window didn't help. Like a glistening chandelier it was, and quite pretty really, but it really distracted from the film. An hour it had been there already. She'd better look and see what it was. But no, that would mean disturbing Billy. It was nearly 1 o'clock in the morning in any case and the film was nearly over. It could wait. What's the matter, love? She'd been so busy looking at the flickering light at the window, she hadn't noticed Billy wake up. Nothing, love, she assured him. Somebody's car isn't, he said, rubbing the sleep out of his eyes. Damn headlights at the window must have woke me up. She was about to tell him that it couldn't be, when he turned and looked over his shoulder to check for himself. Next thing he was on his feet, arms crossed over his face as if to ward off an assailant, backing away, shouting as he stumbled towards her, "Jesus Christ, what's that? What is that?" The words rang in her ears, shouted so loud, so choked with fright. Her senses reeled in surprise as he pulled her to her feet and clung protectively to her. What was happening? She strained to look over his shoulder and see. Then she saw it clearly, and as the fear clutched at her stomach and made her weak, she began to scream. There, framed clearly in the window, the towering figure of a man, or figure that looked like a man. But, dear God, so much bigger. Silver and glowing. But where was the head? She could only see the bottom of it. Impossible. The window was 7 feet high, it must be. But she could only see his torso, his arms, part of the head with. What was it? A helmet, with a blacked out face? She felt faint. Hold me, Billy. Do something. The words wouldn't come. Only involuntary screams. She looked at him for encouragement. I don't know what's happening, love. I don't know. I don't know what it is. She clung to him. Got to do something. Get help. See to the kids. He was telling her. Go upstairs and see to the kids. He watched her go, stumbling, sobbing up the stairs, then turned to look again. It was still there, framed in the window. Motionless, looming at the window, just. What? Looking? Watching? Waiting? For what? Never mind. Don't look too long. Get help, and quickly. Find Blackie. He was a good guard dog. Put him outside. Thoughts clamored in Billy's head. He knew he had never been this frightened in his life before, but that he had to control his shaking, steady himself, act positively. Blackie was howling somewhere. The hall, probably. He went to look. There he was, crouching in the corner, just howling. My God, he was as frightened as they were. Come, Blackie. Common boy, outside, see him off. Billy backed off. Blackie looked like he had the devil in him. His teeth were bared, hackles raised, ready to attack if provoked. No time to worry, thought Billy, grabbing the snarling dog by the scruff of its neck and thrusting it out of the front door into the blackness. Useless. He might have known. No sooner on the porch, than the frightened animal, howling and with its tail between its legs, streaked down the driveway from the house. Billy slammed the door, spun around and backed himself up against it. The trembling started again. He was breathing heavily, sweating profusely. Jesus, he was frightened. He'd never felt so alone. He must get help, outside help. And fast. He didn't want to leave the cramped security of the darkened hall and go next door into the brightness of the lounge with the creature at the window, but he must. The telephone was there. He had to ring for help. Would it still be there? He hardly dared look as he opened the door. It was. Just as before. Just standing at the window looking in. But wait. A movement. Billy froze, the fear choking in his throat. One of the creature's hands. Was it a hand? Dot. Yes, a gloved hand. Was moving, palm outstretched and pressed against the window pane. And now the pane of glass was rattling, vibrating to his touch at an incredible speed. The lights were flickering, on and off. The television, too. What was that interference on the screen? He felt faint, his vision blurring. But it mustn't, he thought. Help. He must get help, before anything else happened. But who? Robert Morrison, first. He was their nearest neighbor, his farm was only 2 miles away. He could be here in a couple of minutes. And the police. He must call the police. They could be here quickly, surely. Robert, hello Robert. Thank God you're there. It's Billy, Billy Coombs. Come up here quickly, for God's sake come up here and help. Billy, do you know what time it is? Heave us above, it's gone 1 o'clock, I can't go. Billy cut him short. Robert, for God's sake, please. You sound as if you're frightened witless, what's going on up there? Dot. Never mind. I'll be right with you. The phone went dead. Billy gasped in relief. And now the police. 999 Which service do you require, fire, police or? Police, police. Broadhaven police. Billy glanced nervously up at the window. The figure was still there. Studying him, watching his every move. Hello, Broadhaven police. Billy steadied himself. They must come. They had to. But would they believe him? Billy Coombs here, Ripperstone Farm, near Dale, he began, trying to subdue the trembling in his voice. Yes, Mr. Coombs, what seems to be the trouble? We need help here, quickly. Please. Please could you send someone as soon as you can? Need help, do you? What sort of help? There's someone at the window. Intruder, is it? Cut in an efficient voice. No, no, you don't understand. We don't know who it is. Or what it is. What it is. It's huge. Looks like a, well, a spaceman of some sort. Billy cursed himself for having to use the word. He was sure he could hear chuckling from behind a muffled receiver. All right sir, we'll send a car straight round to investigate your, intruder. The line went dead. He put the receiver back on the cradle with clumsy, quivering hands. Why should they have believed him? He didn't believe it himself. He glanced nervously at the window. It was still there. Crazy. This was absolutely crazy. He never had believed in such things. Not even in Mark Marston's story that very morning. Yet hadn't Mark described the same thing? He breathed in deeply, trying to rid his system of the feelings of nausea that kept sweeping over him and all the time diverting his gaze from the window. Except when the compulsion grew too strong. Each time he glanced he hoped it would have gone. Yet it never had. Pauline. Where was she? Upstairs with the kids. He must go and see if they were all right. He started up the stairs but only got as far as the first landing before he heard the sound of distant police sirens and turned back.